it's by the way. You know,
it sounds crazy, but it's rational, you know.
And you know, these guys were really hurt. They were hurt bad.
In that truck following you. Yeah, sure.
Because when they bring him to OB, you know, the Operation Bernhardt Hospital, I've seen a guy with, you know, one leg, arm broken, arm. One guy had a bullet right here. You can tell, you know, the bullet was still there. You can touch it. And they were trying to take care of him. Another guy had a bullet right here, and before you know it, he died. I mean, I've seen so many people dying. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, while there was they arrested one man. They claimed he was a paratrooper.
On the work crew?
No, no. She was passing by.
Uh-huh.
And I see them, you know, I seen the Laotian soldiers cutting his ear. And I did not enjoy my stay in that area.
Yeah.
I was making a little bit more money, but I didn't like it. First of all, the house I live at, I tried to rent a little place. I don't know who lived there before. And they left a cat in the house. A big cat about this dog, you know, one of those, what they call them. And I had to feed that thing. You know, and they often have buy chicken, a whole chicken, and feed the side of chicken. Or sometimes deer, you know, deer meat. Finally, I had to move out of that house.
I'd kill the cat. I would kill the cat.
It was about this long. And then when he was hungry, he just go around.
What kind of animal was that?
It's a cheetah? Was it a cheetah?
That's a wild animal.
A wild animal, what? But it was in a cage behind the house.
Okay. I thought at first you meant a house cat.
Oh, no, no, no.
I said it was a very big house cat.
No, wait a minute, he's eating too much.
No.
Then we had another time, one night, there were so many people in camp.
Uh-huh.
There were Filipinos, Thai, Laotian. So I didn't stay at the camp. I stayed outside the camp. One night, I decided to, what was it? No, I was late there, and I said, okay, maybe I stay overnight. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't live too far, and I slept there. And the Padre Clau attacked the camp. You know, the attack lasts usually 5 minutes.
Three minutes. And eight, a few shells.
Okay, the following day, now they hit a couple of bulldozers in front of my house. And my little house was standing, I mean, little two-room house, you know, way outside of camp. If they wanted to burn it, you know, they could have, but they didn't do it.
Yeah.
They put a couple of hand grenades in the bulldozers and the tank and
Blew them up.
Yeah,
and left your house alone.
Yeah, they didn't bother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had quite a few bad memories there.
As
far as the Padre Clau, you know, the Viet Cong, even Viet Cong, because sometimes
they even Vietnamese.
Even Vietnamese, you know, some of them out there. And that was kind of bad.
Now, you said before, I forget if the tape was on or if this was before, that you felt lucky you could survive Tet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for because Tet. I think Russell spent about quite a few days on the bed. Did he tell you that? He did. I think he did, if I'm not mistaken. No, you couldn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't go anywhere. If you were in, you stay in. And I wasn't afraid of the Viet Cong or the Padre Clau. I was afraid of B-52. That was my main thing.
Because the B-52, once they drop the bomb, that's it. Yeah.
You know, I've never seen that before. You know, they'd be refilling up there, and then they'd be loaded with bombs. And you said, well, what? And from what I understand, before they land, they go back to where they came from, and they have a few bombs, you know, they just drop them, you know, anyway.
That was the standard thing.
I was a little bit scared.
But you were watching the B-52s daily, even before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because what I do is I resent the fact that they said we can't go out. There are so many places off limit.
Uh-huh. This is even IVS.
IVS, IVS. Now, when they said off limit, to me, nowhere was off limit to me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I just take my Jeep and take off.
Because if I have a meeting, if I set up a meeting, I'm going to be there. If I have a project, I'm going to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I said there was a problem because things were not always right for me. I did not like the drinking. I think I started telling about
yeah,
that.
The drinking. But that was among the foreigners, not among the Lao.
No. The Lao. When
the Lao. Village, even, oh, that's village. Right. Yeah, you have to get so many drinks before, you know. Sure.
You have to have the Lao, you have to have the
someone outside?
Oh, she's already here. That's
who's this?
She brought me my check.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll just stop this. Sure. Back on again. And we were talking about the drinking and well, this is part of the custom. It's social.
See, from Vermont, I've never been to a bar.
Uh-huh.
We don't have any bar. I don't know if you do, but I've never been to one. Especially in Swanton, where I was.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to any bar.
And not in Haiti?
No.
Yeah.
Not in Haiti, no.
And not in Honduras?
Okay, Honduras, I think I went to a nightclub a couple of times. Oh. This is a little thing. At the end of my stay in Honduras, even though I had some money, but I think for 3 nights I sang in a nightclub.
You did?
Yeah. And make a little bit of money.
Oh, you do have quite a complicated career.
Because I know some Spanish, and some of those, you know, Tony Bennett songs. You know, In Laos, I was a singer in Laos.
As well?
Oh, yeah. I sing Laos. And some, even now, when they have parties in Fairfax and Arlington, they call me, I go on and sing.
Really?
Laotian song. And Lao.
Yeah.
So, my only problem is I couldn't play the can. I'm still trying, but I couldn't play it well. Then, you know, you go to a meeting. Before you start anything, before you even start talking about what you come for, you have to start drinking. You know, and you have two girls who would go around with a small glass, have one, and then you have one. The second girl come by, you have the other one, and then...
And this isn't the pot with the reed coming
out. No, that's something else. That's another kind of...
That's another kind of drinking, yeah.
This one is... The one I'm talking about is the Lao, and it's really strong, stronger than vodka.
What is it made of?
Rice.
Right, it's a rice one. Okay, yeah.
And the other one they call Lao wine. That's the actual wine. You put in a jar and you have two sticks and then
You have a number of sticks
coming out. You can fake that one.
You can just go.
But
when you've got a cup, you have to make it empty. Yeah.
So that's the part I didn't quite like.
But I was wondering about, so really the Tet Offensive, though, it wasn't so much like you were under attack, like in Vietnam. You were more concerned about the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because you see them going by, and if you were down south, I think, close to the border, like in the Boulevard Plateau or something, they evacuate a lot of people from there. And even in Taquet. They evacuated a lot of people from Taquet to the base, the American base in Nakhon Phanom.
Probably just security precaution.
Just security. Mm-hmm. For security reasons. And I don't know, it was, I didn't like it. And they arrested so many people, I've seen this. And believe me, you know, that was another thing. I'm not saying the war was right, because I don't think I believe in war. Anyway, I don't believe in fighting or killing and all this. But if you have some Laotian who resented Souvanaphouma's administration or the king, whatever it is, and some of those bureaucrats or ministers, you can arrest them, accusing them of being part of Lao. You see, there was no political party. So you have so many innocent people, innocent Laotian now,
right,
who died because of that, who were arrested because of that. Sometimes, you know, they would beat them up so bad, you know, and I feel really, even if you were not a part of Lao, then you become a part of Lao once, you know, these kind of things happen. And that's the kind of thing I was, I really didn't like at all.
Yeah, and you see that more and more.
You see it every day. And I think, because I, like I told you, this Chamrung, you know, the mayor, could have killed me. I slept in that guy house. I ate with him most of the time. We eat, you know, and he wouldn't do anything. I mean, but I understand he was one of the guys who attacked the base, a big U.S. base, you know, in Nakanpano.
Really? Okay. So it's not like he was a political enemy of someone?
No. I mean, there were quite a few. All the Americans went over the Japanese involved in development.
Uh-huh.
It could have been something could have happened to him.
Right.
Nothing happened.
Yeah.
But he'll go after the base.
Well, he was making a distinction.
Yeah. They killed him, though. You know, he was arrested.
And then killed?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Huh. One thing I wanted to ask you, you mentioned it already. You mentioned how when you first arrived, you were the first black man in so many years to be by, and only some of the old
and the
people.
Villages.
Yeah, in the villages.
So there was Paul White.
Another
black. Mm-hmm. But Paul White was on education, so he stayed right in Vientiane.
Oh, so, yeah.
And after 2 years, he joined AID.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I saw him in D.C. two, 3 years ago. He was the assistant director, deputy director for USAID in Guatemala.
Oh.
And I think now he's probably the director of AID somewhere in India or Nepal, some of those places. I mean, he went.
Yeah, right up. Well, I obviously... that was a help to you, I think, in some ways, because everyone would get to know you.
Oh yeah,
there would be no mistake.
No.
You know, and that was like the security thing for you, extra protection because they could see that it was you riding in the Jeep and not somebody else.
Oh yeah, that was somebody else. No.
Was there also a downside? I mean, maybe not. I'm just thinking. If there was a positive, maybe there was some negative.
Okay, you know, no matter what, how you feel. I remember when I first got to Swanton, I was the only black in town.
Right.
And then, you know, the civil rights movement was really strong and all this killing, you know, down south and so on. So every once in a while, even if you don't really believe in that, but you will feel kind of bad about it.
Oh, sure.
The kids would come to me and say, "Mr. Bilal, can I touch you?" And I said, "Go ahead." And they would go like this.
Oh, really?
And then suddenly go like this. So there are certain areas whereby people would call me. Okay, let's put it this way. And I've seen it everywhere. I was in Honduras and a panhandler came to me and say, "Hey, negrito, dame un peso."
Okay, my Spanish isn't great, but...
black.
Yeah.
I'm black. Dame un peso.
Right.
Okay, so, you know...
But that makes no sense.
Then I say, why would he call me black?
Yeah, and why does that equal, you know, you're giving him something.
Give him something, okay. Yeah. Then finally, I told him, "No, okay, I'm black, but my name..."
Was that for you? No, okay.
I said, "My name is John." Juan.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Juancito Negrito, dame un peso."
Ah.
No, same thing over. So, when I was in Considon, there was another John.
Uh-huh.
So they call him John Cow, white John, and they call me John Dam.
Oh.
Black John.
Okay,
that's good.
But that was only for reference sake, so
yeah,
they
right.
could clarify which particular man named John they were talking about.
Now, when I come into a village, if you have some older people, because in some of those villages you have some very white individual, I mean what they call white in Laos, because you have that.
Mm-hmm.
You have white, you have not too white, and you have black.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they would say things like they don't even know if I speak Lao.
Mm.
They would curse me out, call me all kind of dirty name, black this, black that, black this, black that, like you know, they do here.
Yeah.
And then I speak.
Yeah, I'm surprised the hell out of it. I love that.
And before you know it, if I'm going to stay for 2 days, the next 2 hours will become just like that.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe it. So, you know, we would speak, you know, Laotian. And you might have, you know, one or two who speak a little bit of French, or I get a little French with them, you know, and then they say, and finally, they were confused because they didn't know what was going on. Obviously, these people have not seen, you know, I mean, some of them have not really seen any black.
Right.
I mean, they seem very, very dark, but not with
right. Not yeah, again, no.
But if you get up in a bad mood, you know, and somebody calling you a black motherfucker, I mean,
No, that's not good for your disposition. No.
So that's why sometimes I get a little upset.
Yeah.
And I must admit that I really get mad. Not really mad, but I don't feel very comfortable when we have visitors American.
Coming to your assignment, yeah.
And telling me, you know, this is not what we're here for, you know, and this kind of things. And I feel like saying, come on, man, I mean, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I think I would have a problem with that. Because they would not, no matter where you go, you have to present, you have to be. I think maybe the Peace Corps had this kind of problem, present the American image, you know, like they do in Vientiane. Those guys believe in big houses, you know, they drive big car, air conditioning, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And you in the village, on the other hand, is different.
Yeah.
So when you have those big shots from Washington, when they come in, but except I had one leg, I wish I had them. I can show it. Well, I don't know if I have it. A letter. One of them came, I forgot his name, and when he came back, to Washington. He wrote a letter to
IBS. A congressman?
A congressman.
He
wrote a letter, a long, long letter to IBS, praising me.
Oh, really?
Praising IBS and me.
Oh. You know?
And this was, I think, kind of nice.
You should find that.
Yes, it's somewhere.
Yeah.
That was one of the nice things. But like I was saying, I never talk against the U.S. government.
Mm.
I never talk against USAID.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I always try to show there is a difference between AID and IBS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like, we live in a little community when we don't have that. Now, when I was working, I had the contract before I was USAID, I lived like an AID personnel. more or less, you know,
yeah.
Which I didn't like either, but you know, for a while, and I did not look down on IDHs, this kind of thing, which has happened very often. They do that to us.
The AID would look down on IDS. Yeah.
Because, like, you know, they would not like to see you hand in hand with a Laotian or sitting cross legged, you know, with your hand eating some carnio or something and sometimes. You know what they don't know? To get people, those people, and anybody really, to do something, most of the time you have to put yourself at the same level as they are, you know, in order to get them to change. You can't just say, look, man, the way you're doing things is no good. My way is better. Go ahead. You can do it.
Yeah.
Because I could have stayed, seriously, I could have stayed with IBS for a long, long time. I mean, a long time, they were very old. But sometimes they can be upset, especially working when you have USAID supervising. Then you had USOM, you know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have different objectives, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that every volunteer has said something like this. Well, maybe not every, but the overwhelming majority. Yeah.
You know, you get $75 and a guy get $2,000 and you're doing mostly the same thing he's supposed to be doing.
And you're doing it, and you're doing it better.
And they're coming after you sometimes. That was my main problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when I left Sayabulism, I think the project
we did achieve the project. But because I know the pilot Lau was going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when we finish the dam, and he will get the land, they take over.
Yeah.
But one good thing, they did not blow the... they did not blow up the dam.
Well, why should they? Because it's now serving them.
You know, that was
It was probably later the U.S. Air Force that blew up the dam.
Yeah, this was another thing. How can I have my little dispensary? I spent so many hours, so many days talking to those people, get them interested, you know, and build it up. And the next day you drop a bomb. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, this was my thing. The pilot cloud would not come in and burn it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have a good vegetable garden, they're not going to, you know, if they see you building, if they see you making that garden, they're going to let you do it.
Sure.
And they stop by later on.
And harvest.
You know.
Or they know that it's for the people, so they don't want to mess up and make the people angry.
They will not.
Yeah.
Even the people themselves, like, you know, the Laotian, the Pisan Laotian, when he's growing his rice, he knows he has to grow enough for his family, enough to give to his friend, enough to give to the Pilot Lao, and if possible, a little bit for us to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows the Pilot Lao is also Laos, you know, if you
mm-hmm.
And of course at home, things were not getting better.
At home? In Haiti, okay.
I was in Laos, I never heard from my parents.
Uh-huh.
My family. I wrote a letter to my brother who was in New York, you know, asking, you know, and I only get one, all these 5 years, I get one letter from him.
Mm.
You know, telling me all my parents were still alive, my brothers were all gone, some in France, you know, some in Africa.
And you had access to the APO, so it's like you had a decent mail system.
Yeah, oh yeah, no problem, except to Haiti.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Between Haiti. The U.S. and Haiti, yeah.
Because
not between the U.S., between Laos and the U.S.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a little article in the newspaper about Haiti, only once, in Bangkok.
Mm.
And if you send, no matter what you send in Haiti, they open it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? This was my problem. At the end, I was not really confused, but I was not too happy.
Right.
Because I missed my mother. You know,
no, 5 years is a long time to be away from any place.
It was more than that.
And it was more than that, because you were in the States and all. States. Yeah. Yeah.
And I know, you know, how it was when I left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very, very bad. And it was, I feel good, because when I came back, I seen a lot of people that I knew in Laos, and a lot of people that I left and they stayed, and when I came back, I was still there. But there was someone, a very unusual man, with IBS,
uh-huh.
called, his name was Fred Brethman?
Yeah, Fred Brethman, yeah.
You met him.
I haven't met him, but... I have a partner in this project, and he's in California, and they met.
Oh, they met? Was here. Oh, this was... because I think he quit IVS and then started writing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I wouldn't even know what he was up to. And when I came back, I came to Washington, and I saw him in Washington.
Uh-huh.
And again, I don't know what he was doing, because he was writing underground. I mean, all kind of... I met him today, I saw him today, and the next day I went back, he read the house he was living at. I mean, not really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was. But I don't think he was a communist or anything like that. He just was, I don't know what he was up to.
Mm.
All the time, he was not with 5 years, but he was writing, I don't know, for what, newspapers or something. He was given a conference one time in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I came back, I worked in Philadelphia, and I stayed there and worked in Philadelphia for
a couple of years.
And then I went. He didn't know I was there, and then somehow saw me, and he started talking, and he said, Well, there's someone here who can tell you a little bit more about the war than I can, so why don't you have, you know, and then uh-huh. call my name, so I went over and talk a little bit to some of those students. But I tell people, now I can't recall everything that had happened when I was in Laos, but I've told people so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And these are memories that will stay with me. Now, when I came back to the States, there were some changes, but not that much. In Haiti, it was just the same thing. So in 1972, I decided, when I heard on the news, Duvalier is dead, and now the son took over, and he invited all Haitians to come back home, and blah, blah, blah. So I sent my wife, she's never been to Haiti, she uh-huh. doesn't speak Creole,
uh-huh.
so I sent her to Haiti, to my mother's house. I said, well, just go take a look, see what's going on, and you call me.
Yeah, 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 you can tell me, because they'll let you out again. If right. you, yeah.
So she did, and she said, no, there's nothing. After 2 months, she said, come over, no, come on.
Uh-huh.
So I went, and I stayed. And the first thing I did, well, I started a little thing and it didn't work out, so in business it didn't work out. And I'm not the business type, I was just, I'm not the type. So I got a job with an agency called Haitian American Health Organization. And then they sent me out in the bush and I'd be doing the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Dig just, well and...
Just back home.
So I was exactly doing agricultural things and fish mm-hmm. burns and...
Same old, same old.
It was the only thing though. In Laos, usually when I didn't say, I can say I wasn't scared, but at the end, like after TET, I was really, you know, I mean, you're driving in a bush by yourself.
Yeah.
You expect any kind of ambush at any given time.
Yeah.
So when I went to Haiti, they sent me out. I get down there in December. By May, I was already in the bush. And of course, the same walk, kind of road, you know, mm-hmm. no mm-hmm. paperwork uh-huh. to drive uh-huh. in the bush, and it's curve and so on. And every time I come to a curve, I get flashback.
Really?
You know, it's like someone is there to get
yeah.
me, you know.
Yeah.
And, when I sleep, now remember now. In Laos, we have the Padek Lao.
Right.
In Haiti, you have the Tonton Macoute.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So even though, you know, and
which I think would be much worse.
Yeah, it's worse. It is really worse. And especially I left when Duvalier was by that guy, and I came back, they don't know who I am, what I'm doing, and so on and so forth. But it's like I think people would call that, not post-war, I was not on a war, I was on the area. But to me, it's like I was living the same experience in Laos over again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this went on. This really went on for at least a year.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more, as a matter of fact.
No, there is the post-traumatic stress.
That's
it really is.
Stress. And they, I talked to a couple of psychologists and psychiatrists about it. And, I don't know. After a while, like I said, after over a year, I was okay.
Yeah, you were probably lucky that you did that, because I met, and actually this has to be off the record, and that was good. Right. And I put the tape back on.
It took me over a year, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it did. I mean, it's a clear indication that you got out when you should.
Yeah.
Never mind making more money with AID.
Because think. I don't know, after I left, it seems that after 70, because I left in July 70.
Let's see, 68th, yeah.
I think things get worse.
Yeah, because then Sihanouk would have been thrown out,
yeah.
And then the Khmer Rouge would have gained greater power there, and then things deteriorating in Laos, and then things deteriorating more in Vietnam. It's just, you know, the whole area was getting worse and worse. You know, one thing I think we're coming to a conclusion with a lot of this, because you're already back home.
Yeah.
In your story.
Right.
But one thing that we've been asking people is how IBS affected them. But I think that maybe IBS was just in the pattern of your life.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, because some people would come in, it would change their life completely.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think in your case, that's
in my
true.
Case, no. As a matter of fact, what I'm doing here right now
is more like IBS.
It's just the same thing.
It's more like the Boy Scouts.
But
it's just, you know, yeah, et cetera, et cetera.
It is. And again, I don't find more problem with the people I'm working with here.
Uh-huh.
Because my office is here, but I don't really, you know, before I was a director for Residential Services, we have over 138 residents. I was in charge of 15, 16 houses.
Yeah.
But because of my heart attack, they give me something easier,
right?
Which is the coordinator of client activities. Again, I have to deal with every single client individually. And I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But with...
higher-ups? Yeah.
So it's,
I think that's everyone's complaint. There's always a problem, not with the lateral, with the horizontal.
I can live with those people. Sometimes, and as a matter of fact, I get sick because one time I came down and I stayed almost 4 days. I didn't go home and I stayed with them all day, all night. Because I know I cannot solve the world problem or even my own problem.
Mm.
But I can try, I can help.
Yeah.
I think there are many things. This is something I would say my motto in life is really like the scout motto.
Yeah.
Like serve here until I'm gone. Because right now I had a chance if I wanted to be like a lot of people I know. I could have made some money in Laos.
Mm.
When I was with the mail.
Mm-hmm.
With opium,
mm-hmm.
when I was doing my things up there,
mm-hmm.
and when I went to Haiti, and then finally after I worked for the agency, called Haitian American Community Health Organization, I got a job with USAID.
In Haiti?
In Haiti.
Oh, okay.
And again, I had to quit.
Yeah.
Because it's just a waste.
Yeah. I think it may be final question, but there was that Pop Buell who was in. Did you know him? What kind of guy was he?
Well, how do I describe him? I would say he was a guy doing his own thing.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. And using all kind of resources he had to accomplish something personal.
Because he seemed driven.
That's the only way I can say it. If I want to make this table, I can beg for glue, for nails, for the wood, for everything, and so on and so forth. But there are certain things I will not do in order to make this table. I'd rather stay without the table itself. How would I make it a little clear? I think he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did an awful lot. But was it for personal benefit, personal gain, personal reason? A lot of people think it was great.
Yeah, no, I know. I've had many people describe him like a father figure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Almost like Tom Dooley.
Yeah, yeah. A later Tom Dooley, but with the armed combat.
See, it's not really. I think people sometimes who can call a dog, doggy or something, or a cat, you know, Mimi or whatever. But sometimes, you know, you get to tell the truth. If you see something that you don't like, that doesn't go with your beliefs or something, you have to stand, really stand for what you believe in. But very often, if you do that, then you cannot get what you want in order to satisfy it. You know, that's where is he?
He's dead.
What year?
It was after 75, I think. I only heard the story. I think he was still in Asia, but I think he was visiting some friends in Manila and had a heart attack and died. Maybe 1980, something like that. Maybe 81.
81?
Something.
81, yeah. I was in Haiti.
Yeah.
You know, there was another person. He was an author also at the same time. But a lot of people say he was working for CIA. I don't think he's back in. One of good friends I have was his first name, Dwayne.
Dwayne.
McKinney.
No, they haven't heard.
Dwayne McKinney. He was an IBS. When I get there in 65, he was already there, so he must have been there since 1963 or 64. Mm-hmm. And he left like everybody else to work for EID.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he was in Haiti. He was the guy who got me the job in USAID.
Oh, how nice.
he was great. He was in the health office. And we used to kind of feel the same way. We don't like authority, but we don't want a lot of problems. He had to, I think, quit EID after a long time. And he retired in Thailand now.
McKeithen.
Yeah.
Edwin. He is, I'm not sure where he is, but he's with AID. And he has Box 47, APO, San Francisco, California. Maybe this is an old address.
No, maybe he's with AID now.
Okay.
But if he is, he should retire now, though. Because he's what, maybe 52, 53, must have been. Because he joined AID in 1967 or something.
It could just be an old address, last one they had for him.
Because I know he's in Thailand.
Okay.
Well,
that could be where the Box 47, that maybe that's what that means.
Okay.
And I looked up also Paul White, because you mentioned his name, and he's in Tokyo. That's what the address they have for him.
Oh. What is it? With the ID?
That they don't say. They only have...
Here. Because I know he left. When the last time we talked, he said to us...
I wrote no above there because no, we weren't going to send him things. We were only sending things to people inside the U.S.
No
address?
Oh. I think my wife has the address.
Yes.
No, Paul White was the idea. Even... Now, this is the whole trick now. Even some of us with IBS, even when we get there, we didn't feel like... I know I was an IBS and I was going to what I was down there for.
Uh-huh.
But you had another small group who didn't really care much about IBS. They wanted to go with the ID right off.
And really?
You know,
Paul White was like that.
Oh, yeah. He became the... When I saw him, he was assistant deputy director of USAID in Guatemala. All those trouble that was going on.
So he went from Laos to Guatemala eventually.
Oh, no, he went from Laos to...
Yeah, to many other places,
and
yeah.
Finally became...
Got down to Guatemala.
No, I can't remember the name of that other person who did not stay for a long, long time. But we didn't know whether he was with the CIA or the CIA.
Who knows?
There's some people just...
Well, I think...
Chet Brown, you talked to him.
Chet Brown?
Somebody talked to him last
when I left, he was the last IBS director. I mean, chief of party.
Chester Brown. Mm-hmm. There's no address for him here.
No, he probably died. Because when he came down in 66, he was probably 50-something.
Oh, yeah, he's probably...
He left everything he had in the States and came down.
He's probably not with the living anymore.
No.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll turn off the tape recorder.
Okay.
But...
I don't know if... Oh, okay. What I'll do is, since you're leaving next week... Did you give me your number?
Yeah, I can't because I have the number in back at the residence.
But oh, okay. No, what you do is call me tomorrow.
I can call you and give you the phone number.
Okay. Right.
And also, I have to call you anyway about Tom.
Right.
So I'm going to call you anyway. In the meantime, I will shake your hand and thank you very much.
I'm going to take him home.
You're going to give him a call?
I will.
I'm glad that we're that sometimes reunions will happen because of this.
Right.